J'adore Vivienne habillez-moi Gucci, Fendi et Prada Valentino, Armani, Tour Merde, I love them, Jimmy Choo Buy your and put it on the man Don't you wanna see these clothes on me I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, it's Saturday morning. That's Lady Gaga. This is Radio National. How fantastic. But bad luck. You're in for disappointment. That's all you're getting of Lady Gaga this morning. That's her 2013 track, Fashion. I am, it's fair to say, roughly as comfortable talking about fashion as I am about Lady Gaga. And it seems I'm not alone. Culturally, we're very well versed in the world of clothing design and fashion. But when it comes to actual critical analysis, contributions tend to languish in the domain of I like it or I don't like it. Pretty base stuff. So we're very lucky to be joined this morning by someone whose contribution to serious fashion critique is at the other end of the spectrum. Dana Thomas is a Paris-based cultural and fashion writer, and she's in Australia as part of the Melbourne Fashion Festival. But before we go to her, let's hear a little taste of one of pop culture's more notable recent representations of the fashion industry. It's never too early on a Saturday morning to hear a little bit of Meryl Streep.
Oh, okay. I see. You think this has nothing to do with you. You go to your closet, and you select, I don't know, that lumpy blue sweater, for instance, because you're trying to tell the world that you take yourself too seriously to care about what you put on your back. But what you don't know is that that sweater is not just blue, it's not turquoise, it's not lapis, it's actually cerulean. And you're also blithely unaware of the fact that in 2002, Oscar de la Renta did a collection of cerulean gowns. And then cerulean quickly showed up in the collections of 8 different designers. And then it filtered down through the department stores and then trickled on down into some tragic casual corner where you no doubt fished it out of some clearance bin. However, that blue represents millions of dollars and countless jobs. And it's sort of comical how you think that you've made a choice that exempts you from the fashion industry when in fact you're wearing a sweater that was selected for you by the people in this room. From a pile of stuff.
Dana Thomas, you've written about fashion for everyone, from Harper's Bazaar to Vogue to the New York Times style section. So before we get to whether Devil Wears Prada is just irritating and wrong, tell us, big question, why does fashion matter?
Well, I think fashion matters in part because every morning we get up, we brush our teeth, and then we get dressed. And the clothes that we put on reflect, in theory, who we are, how we're feeling that day, what we have to do. They tell a story. And we make these choices, and that's what that excerpt was about. While we think we make choices, along the way, some of these choices are made from people way, way up above. I remember one time I was covering a fabric show in Paris, which is the fabric show where all the designers go to pick up fabrics. And I was there with a girlfriend of mine who covers trade shows for Women's Wear Daily. And she said, you think this is impressive? And, you know, you see all the plum and mauves around here this season, meaning that, you know, in 6 months, we're going to be seeing plum and mauve as the dominant color on the runways. And then a year from now, everyone's going to be wearing plum and mauve all the way down to Gap. She said, you think this is important? Wait till you go to the thread show.
Wow. So all the way down to thread doesn't get more kind of specific than that as a thing. But I don't know. I look at a film like this and the fashion industry looks like an industry that talks to itself, that while we may experience and feel the end product, it's a kind of rarefied world off in the distance. Is that a bad way to think about it?
No, it's funny. I often say that many of the people who sit in the front row of the fashion shows write for 400 other people who sit in the front rows of the fashion shows. And I have always tried to be not doing that, in part because I started my career at the Washington Post with ambitions to be a White House correspondent. You can see how far I got on that track. But because I was raised to be a general assignment feature writer and reporter who could write about anything. I've covered the French Open. I've covered rock, you know, history of cave art in the south of France. I've written about, you know, science. I've written about business. And so for me, fashion is a beat like any other beat. It's a part of our everyday lives like so many other things. It could be food. It could be restaurants. It could be music. It could be cinema.
So given that, how well does fashion as a beat analyze itself, critique itself, talk about what's working and what's not?
It's sort of two-tiered. There's a whole level of fashion writers who write for the glossy magazines. And the glossy magazines have a sort of hand-in-hand relationship with the companies because the companies buy advertising and they dominate those magazines with their advertising. And that's how the magazines work. And we used to say at the newspaper, you know, we like to think of ourselves as writing news for the community, but in fact, our stories fit around the advertising. We have to always remember that our stories come after the pages have been sold for ads. That's the generator for revenue. So they do have this sort of, in the glossies, unlike newspapers, they do have a sort of symbiotic relationship where they go to the shows and they'll write nice things about the shows and then they'll put nice clothes in the show, in the magazine, and then the companies will buy advertising and the editors will wear the clothes and they'll have an expense account and they'll have good relationships with the designers. Anna Wintour has built a reputation of being a counselor to designers and to executives and trying to help, you know, work almost like a headhunter and place the right designer at the right house. The most famous account of this was John Galliano after he was fired from Dior 4 years ago. She lobbied hard with her friend Oscar De La Renta, who was mentioned in that clip, to hire John as his heir because Mr. De La Renta was ill and recently passed away. And it was Anna who suggested that he bring on John. Now, coming from a newspaper background, I could never do such things. We have a strict separation of church and state when I worked at the Washington Post and at the New York Times and at Newsweek magazine. But I'm one of the few who does cover the fashion beat who does that.
How much does the rise of the internet, the rise of the independent commentator and critic change the pressures on the way fashion's written about?
Well, it's interesting because it really has changed not just the way fashion is written about, but where people turn to find information on fashion. And like everything else, there's less and less reading of newspapers, not just about fashion, but in general, and more reading of blogs and on the web. And those things have been culled from newspapers. But, you know, you're looking at somebody's idea of what's important on their Facebook page and clicking through it, or a rewrite on a blog that's a paragraph of what was a story, an abbreviated version with some opinion. So there's far more opinion writing out there, often misinformed, very often filled with mistakes or misinterpretations. So I always like to go back to the original source. If somebody's writing something about what Vanessa Friedman wrote in the Times, I just go read what Vanessa Friedman wrote in the Times. There are fewer and fewer critics like me, like Vanessa, like Booth, like Graben, who – those are the Americans. I cite them because – they're the ones I know, but who do step back and do write about this in an objective and at least try to be fair way of approaching the beat, like any other beat, like a good critic.
It must be hard, though, beyond the questions of compromise and difficulties with objectivity. Is there not more, perhaps, than in other art forms, a danger of subjectivity? The question of taste being what underlines so much fashion writing?
I think that's the case in any sort of critique and in any genre, you know, film reviewers, art reviewers. I mean, how many times have you read a piece of an art exhibit and you go see it and you go, are they crazy? Or somebody's given a thumbs up to a movie and halfway through you just want to leave. You know, it's all subjective. I think with fashion, the thing that's become most difficult with the fashion industry is the speed and the amount that we're expected now as reporters to cover, like the designers have been expected to keep churning out. That before, luxury fashion was a niche business for a niche clientele. In the late 70s, Louis Vuitton had two stores, had one main line, which was that monogram line, and they did like $14 million a year in business. It was not a big company. Today, there's 400 stores, and they have several different kinds of lines, and they have fashion lines, they have this and that. They're about to come out with a perfume. They've got so much going on. And as a reporter, you have to follow all these changes. When John Galliano, for the first 10 years of his career, he did two collections a year, and when he was fired from Dior and his own brand, he was overseeing 32 collections a year. That was a ton for him to churn out idea-wise, and it was a ton for fashion writers to have to keep up with. And so, you know, there used to be the shows twice a year, maybe four times a year, and now it sort of drags on for 8 weeks several times a year. My friends from the United States are in Paris all the time, and which is fun for me.
Good to have the visitors. Fun for them as well,
I guess.
Fun for
them too. But in fact, it's not, because they used to be able to come over for dinner, and now I'm lucky if I get to see 5 minutes of them at a show.
I feel I'm talking to people burdened by very difficult lives.
But they do. They're churning out now for the web. They're churning out for the daily. They're churning out for Instagram. They're writing Twitter posts. And that's the thing. Before, we used to write about what was, you know, at the newspaper, we would write about what was happening today for tomorrow's paper. And now you just blip out a tweet and run an Instagram picture as it's happening.
But so what's the impact? I mean, going back to your earlier comments about it being just another beat, in a way.
Well, it's become very fast, you know, like fast food, in a sense. There was the fast fashion model, like H&M and Zara and Mango, where they take ideas from the runway and they just zap them out and they put them in the store for 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 1 week. As soon as it sells out, they're just always redoing their stock and setting new trends and making it happen just to get people to keep buying and buying and consuming and consuming. And the luxury fashion business wasn't doing that for a long time. It would prefer that you bought something and you wore it for months.
I guess it's that
now they've adopted that. And the writing has followed that speed. So we're all running really fast.
So best case scenario, your job is done as well as it can be. You know, the best fashion critique is happening and it's robust. What's the impact of that? How does that help the world? How does that help fashion be better? How does that give us an insight?
Well, Anna Wintour once told me that she loved the idea that designers such as Victor and Rolf and Stella McCartney were doing capsule collections for companies like H&M, for those fast fashion companies, because she said it brings better fashion to more people around the world. Just because it's cheap doesn't mean it has to be ugly, which goes back to that original clip. You think you're wearing cerulean blue lumpy sweater that you got in a carton in an Army Navy shop, but it's a descendant of Oscar de la Renta. Well, now many of those designers do capsule collections for more fast fashion brands, and therefore, we all get to dress a little bit more stylishly for less money.
It's a nice theory, and hopefully bridging that disconnect between the luxury version of it and the everyday impact is something that can happen. But it's been fascinating to hear your perspective on it, Dana. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
I've been joined by fashion critic Dana Thomas. Her latest book is called Gods and Kings, The Rise and Fall of Alexander McQueen and John Galliano. I'm sorry we didn't get to it today, because it is a romp. Everyone behaves very badly. Dana will be speaking at the Melbourne Fashion Festival at 4:30 tomorrow. It's a free event and details are up on the Blueprint homepage. This is Blueprint for Living on RN and Radio Australia. I'm Michael Williams.